B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
And on the line with us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast, the coach, Jim Lynham, joins us right now. Coach, how you doing, man?
What's up, guys?
Jim, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on with us. I know you were very close to the situation, and I'm asking everybody this. How were you informed that Kobe Bryant did pass away in the helicopter accident?
Mark, let me just say, before I was listening to Donnie Carr, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed that. He painted such an accurate picture of who Kobe was. I was just laying sitting up here in my bed. I was riveted. So it props to him for you know, bearing himself and just really going back. How did I find out? I came off the golf course. My son-in-law was playing in the group ahead of me. And he came up, and I mean, the words are, "Did you hear?"
Yeah.
I said, "Hear what?" "About Kobe." And I knew right then.
Mm.
I knew.
Jim, you've certainly known the legends as time has gone on. The thing that we even talked to Dee about yesterday was, guys like this, they can't be killed. They can only die. They can only grow old and die. And they mentor the game. And there was a lot of tie-ins between Kobe Bryant and Bill Russell. And we certainly see Bill Russell around the game. And they're there for the younger players. And that's what you would expect from Kobe Bryant. But we've been robbed of having that mentorship from any point beyond this one, because he went only at 41 years old.
You know, well stated. By you, Mark. I think that's part of the pain, the disbelief, the sadness that we all feel for exactly the reasons that you just stated. And somehow, because of the, as Donnie Carr painted the picture, I mean, this guy, I'm not, because he's no longer with us, I'm not trying to paint a picture that's not the real world. This guy was one for the ages, period. Close the book. In a blink of an eye, I guess what it shows you is how fragile life is.
Mm. And now, of course, late 80s, or really mid 80s to early 90s, you're in Philadelphia, you're coaching here, you go to Washington, so you know the story. I mean, you know, lifer here and all that. You know the story of Kobe Bryant. He breaks into the league in 96 in the draft. When did you know that Kobe Bryant was going to be a real deal for the NBA?
I'm going to tell you when I had a clue. It's amazing. I call it pieces of the puzzle. The first piece of the puzzle, Donnie Carr said 92, was when Kobe came back and started playing in Sunny Hills League in the summer. You go back like 3 years before that. I watched them up at Old McGonigal Hall in the summer as, like, I'm, I don't know, 9, 10, 11 years old. He was out doing a Larry Bird pregame workout on the court by himself. By himself. He was working on footwork. I'm telling you, he was like 10 years old. And then when I started hearing the stories, talking to Joe, Joe introduced them to me one of those summers later. And I never forgot that image. And the first time they told me what Bird used to do that, when you go into the Boston Garden, Bob Cooney could tell you this. You go into the Boston Garden, you get off the bus, you're walking to the locker room, walk in the concourse, from the concourse to the court. The lights aren't on yet.
Mm-hmm.
Bird is down on the court shooting. That's my first image of Kobe Bryant. Yes.
Jimmy, I'm always fascinated by the way people watch games, and you've alluded to Donnie Carr. Donnie watched Kobe as an opponent, you know, as a competitor. We had on Joey Crawford earlier, and he was talking about how he watched him, but he watched him as a referee, through referee's eyes. When you were coaching in the league, and you were an assistant with the Sixers and when Kobe was playing and all that, how do you view him as a coach? Like, what do you see in his game, the positives? How do you go about attacking him? Like, what did you see as a coach on Kobe?
Bobby, I'm going to tell you two things. I'll tell you what I told my brothers in the aftermath of the shock. Because one of them asked a similar question to what you just posed. I said, I viewed Kobe like I had a magic marker in my hand and I was reaching in my pocket for the card. That's how I viewed him. Yes. like, give me your autograph, dude. I wanted him to know, like, what I felt toward him in terms of, like, what he was in the process of creating. I used to say this. You know how to be like Mike? We all of us put Jordan on the top line of the players who were still playing.
Right.
He didn't want to be like Mike. You talk about setting a goal and that the world knew it. Every player in the league. No, I'm not trying to be like Mike. I'm not trying to be in an all-star game. I'm taking Mike down. That top shelf is mine. That was his goal. That's how he worked every single day. He wanted that spot. Carr told you. That's why he locked himself in the room. Who knows what he did there, but I got news for you. That was his mission.
Honestly, Coach, my thought is that he just sat in the room, stared at the wall as he reprogrammed himself to be the number one guy. That's it.
Maybe.
I got news for you.
You got to say it. There was a little bit of success to whatever he did.
Let me, because you have coached so many players. Is the greatest frustration in coaching that there are guys that have talent, just a baseline talent that is above most, but they're not willing to put in the work to just go to that extra level, that next level? Is that the most frustrating thing? Because it seems that Kobe, obviously phenomenally talented, but he was also willing to work to get even more out of that talent.
I hear you, Mark, but and it's almost like a separate question because you're not talking this kind of talent.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was that unique. I mean, I sat there the other night and I was watching SportsCenter for the second time. They replayed it where I was down in Florida. And I just watching what he was doing, like Donnie Carr said, he came back 2 years later. You don't do the things Kobe Bryant was doing. I mean, literally. I mean, unless you're Michael Jordan. I mean, he takes you on the drive. He's driving to the basket, and he explodes off the floor, and, like, he almost throws you through the basket before the floor. You're watching play after play of this. Come on.
Jimmy.
Watch this one. He was on his tear of, I'm almost sure it was 9 straight 40-point games. Al Maurice's assistant, Maurice Sheik's assistant with the Portland Trailblazers. We go into L.A., he had 7 at that time, right? We have a player, Reuben Patterson, who was a good player and a very good defender. Well, Reuben had played Kobe earlier in the season and, like, did a decent job. I'll make it up and say he held him to 25. So Reuben Patterson, the day before the game, he nicknames himself the Kobe Stopper. He's the Kobe Stopper. All right, Kobe goes out. And the Lakers beat us like an 8-point game. And Kobe gets a basket like in the last, I'm going to say, 2 minutes. He gets 40 on the nose. So the 40 streak is still gone. Well, Reuben is walking around the locker room like he just held Kobe Bryant because he had to get a shot in the basket in the last 2 minutes to get 40. So he's talking to the media, you know, and if Kobe Stopper was like in small print, now it's in bold letters. All right, watch. First game against the Lakers the next year in Portland. It's a war of a game. We have a 2-point lead. Come out of the timeout, it's Laker ball. Kobe has the ball, and whatever play they set up, and it's right in front of our bench. Sheik and I still talk about this. 8, 7, 6, the clock's going down. You see Kobe like waves, like he's telling the guy out of the road. And he has the ball alive, and he looks up at Reuben. And he didn't say this out loud. He went like this. This is his mindset. Hey, you, Kobe Stopper, watch. He dribbles right to 3-point land, put the ball, bam, bottom of the net, 1 second, boom, buzzer. And he was in a crouch when he hit the floor. And he looked up, Lakers win 1, looks at Reuben Patterson, and he gave a half a smirk, stood up, turned, and walked.
those are the moments, Jim, that I think a lot of us will look back on it that really demonstrate the type of mentality that he had. You know, last thing I want to ask you is, when you think about a legacy, as we referenced earlier, guy only 41 years old, and the thing I still have trouble wrapping my head around is that when you see the crawl come across the screen, it says Laker legend dead at 41. And you think of a legend as, you know, a guy that has had his career and then mentored for at least 30, 40 more years after that, you know, and we see him going to the Hall of Fame. We see that speech. Overall, what will Kobe Bryant's legacy be to you?
His legacy for me, Mark, his play spoke for itself as like just something beyond special. And because of the way I saw him as a person, that term Renaissance man applied to him as a 12-year-old. And I think his legacy, he would have accomplished more or as much, it's hard to say more, as much in post-basketball career as he did in his playing days. That's how unique a person he was. I think that's how much a giver he was. And I can't even fathom what his family and close friends are going through. And I just offer my sympathies.
Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Jim. Hey, Coach Lynam, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on, my friend. Thanks so much, and I'll be seeing you over at NBC.
My pleasure.
Hit him straight, Jimmy.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.